Isn't starting the podcast really the biggest awooga of all?
That's beautiful.
It really is.
My eyes pop out of my head as I gaze upon my lovely co-host.
Yeah, my tongue rolls out like a fruit by the foot, hits the ground. Mm. Like, yeah, one of those.
Mm. Yeah, I expect nothing less. Hitting myself on the head with a hammer.
My tongue rolls out in order for the object of my admiration to walk up like a red carpet.
That's very slick. Nice. It's like fantastic imagery right there.
The object of my affection is falling down my tongue like Jason Derulo at the Met Gala.
That's such a specific reference. That's so specific.
Hello, it is Masters of Our Domain. It's the podcast that used to be about Seinfeld. Now it's about classics, probably. I am Milo Edwards. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-hosts Phoebe Roy and Patrick Wyman. How are we doing?
Yeah, doing good. I see we still haven't quite nailed the new intro.
I quite like that it changes every week.
Hey, look, variety is the spice of life. And if you don't have a little variety in your podcast intro, how are the listeners going to be kept on their toes? How are they going to know that we're actually putting in that level of individual effort into every episode?
That's true. Variety is the spice of life. Awooga.
Yeah.
Awooga.
I'm going to try and catch the listener out. I think. See who's really listening by just one week going like, and you're listening to Taint and Grundle.
Taint and Grundle in the morning.
Flying through the Sparrow's Hall. Awooga! Yeah.
This is our new morning zoo radio show that we were doing off mic.
I really want to hear Matt Berry do an awooga noise.
Awooga! And can I say awooga? Yeah, I don't know. There is that one guy on Twitter who does Matt Berry incredibly well.
He did Matt Berry as Obi-Wan Kenobi. That had me in my laughs for quite some time.
Mm. Yeah, Matt Berry is Zeus in Chaos. How about that?
That would work extraordinarily well.
Yeah.
That's a very similar energy to what Jeff Goldblum is working with here.
Don't tell me I'm not Lord of the Gods.
You really are the most devious bastard chained to a rock, having his liver pecked out by an eagle on a daily basis.
Don't make me be forced to smite you. Yeah.
What is that? That is not Matt Berry.
I've not dialed in a Berry. I've never had the need.
Okay. It's new year, new you.
That's right. Yeah, maybe that could be my new thing.
I can occasionally do a not bad Berry, but I'm not going to practice it here. This is not my training ground. This is not my dojo. I'm going to practice
this is the Olympics. Only bring finished impressions.
Save it for a less exalted podcast, Phoebe.
That's right.
Yeah. Save it for a guest appearance on something.
Save it for Berry Time, which is a podcast where people go on and do their best Matt Berry impression.
Yeah. They get a lot of confused Absolute Radio Breakfast Show fans tuning in, and they're like, "Oh, it's Matt Berry."
Yeah, you can't just go from Taint and Grundle in the morning to that a little bit of whiplash.
No, you can't. You can't. Right. So we've watched Chaos again. We've watched, in fact, Season 1, Episode 2. I have to say, it's getting more confusing.
It's extremely confusing.
They're introducing a lot of elements to the plot. Which are not strictly canon.
That's true.
This episode had Annabelle really confused, because she's like, did the ancient Greeks believe in reincarnation? And I was like, no, and I'm not sure why they're crowbarring that into this.
No. I think that they are confusing common mythic motif of sort of transformation and metamorph symbiosis with it being a sort of reincarnation, but it's not, you're not, you don't have like, if you get like turned in, well, turned into a bee, you're still you, but a bee, you're not like,
yeah,
you don't have a new bee soul, like a kind of refreshed bee character.
Imagine, you know, your husband comes home and he's just a bee. Just like,
might be more useful around the house.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm poor agent Davies come back from Savers and he's a bee. Fucking useless.
I didn't know that bees could survive in Glasgow.
He won't even explain himself. He's just dancing. We all like to boogie, Davy, but how'd you get yourself into this situation?
Yeah. So, okay. I agree. That is very confusing. The whole thing with the frame and the water and the diver. I'm not making any sense of it. But as is my standard approach, I'm just gonna keep ripping the pendulum until it starts to make sense.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
That was my approach last night. Okay. And I followed it and it worked. Mm. And by the end of the episode, I was like, okay, I'm vibing. I'm here. All right. Okay. Yeah. I like this. I really loved the being on a giant steamship crossing the River Styx.
Yeah.
They've industrialized the River Styx.
I really liked that. I thought that it was a cool scene and a cool kind of set of imagery that they were working with. I liked that a lot. I think why they've done the frame thing and reincarnation is because to explain how the ancient Greeks actually understood the existence of a soul, like when you go back to a pre kind of Platonist or Neoplatonist pre-Christian understanding of the nature of the soul and the relationship between life and death, that gets super confusing for modern people whose entire frame of reference for understanding these things is based on a tradition that is Christian, but ultimately Neoplatonist. Mm. It's a product of kind of the intellectual environment of the first couple of centuries AD. And when you go back before that, their understanding of these things was so wildly different that I think it would be very difficult to translate. Mm. So I think they've just kind of like upcycled the afterlife or refreshed it through that lens to kind of make it make more sense. That's my guess.
The trouble is, you know, the writers, they're importing an Aristotelian understanding based on sort of Christian thought, when really, is, you know, you need a more pre-Socratic idea, like something Heraclitus would have come up with. There's not enough about stepping in rivers and the flight of arrows and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an accurate appraisal of the act of cultural translation that's taken place to give us some fucking frame in black and white and shades of gray that I don't understand.
Yeah, I think the big one is people find it difficult to cope with the idea of there being no post-death either punishment or reward, or rather how good you've been as a person is sort of irrelevant to the final destination of your soul. And if you end up in like the bad bit of the underworld, it's because you've upset the gods and not because you've been a bad person necessarily. Or not like necessarily like a particularly bad person.
It's like Russia. Like nothing that good or bad will happen to you unless you really piss off the guys in charge, in which case an incredibly Baroque thing will happen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. I think that's there are gulags. There are torture prisons and murder holes and things of that nature. But for the most part, you're just going to end up buried in a depressing cemetery outside Moscow. Like that's the norm. Like it could be worse.
Yeah.
Can't really get better.
Most people in Hades, they're just in a Khrushchevka, you know. they're just eking out a meager living in Hades. You know, they're eating boiled chicken, stuff like that. But no one's flogging them or pecking their liver out.
So yeah, they live in one of.
I think that's.
They live in one of those gigantic apartment blocks.
Yeah, 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 for sure. I think that's why they've kind of invented this sort of ersatz reincarnation idea, because there has to be some kind of stakes for trying to get Eurydice out of the underworld, right? Otherwise, yeah. Otherwise it's just a bit like, oh well, she's dead, mate. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, man.
because like for most ancient people, yeah, and I think Phoebe, I think you're exactly right when you mentioned. Like the idea of there not being punishment or rewards for what you've done in life in the afterlife, which is pretty common to most of the kind of broad Abrahamic tradition at this point. I mean, no, there are differences between religions, but the basic idea is what we do in life echoes in eternity. Mm. And that you get your just desserts for better or worse after you die. The ancient Greeks did not think that way. Really, like that was not there. The underworld was just kind of cold. Yeah. It was just kind of cold and desolate and boring, and you were there, and that was that. And tough shit. Yeah. I mean, which is frankly, I think a little bit too bleak for most present day people.
Yeah, I was gonna say what I enjoyed about this portrayal was that they did all the scenes in the underworld were in black and white, which I thought does kind of get across how the Greeks conceptualized it of being this kind of like you say, cold, dank and boring place. Where it just kind of sucked. It was just like going on a bad holiday, but forever. It's not like a torture, it's just bad. Like it's just not good.
It's more like you know what? Like every single day in May, it's been beautiful. You know what I think we should do? You know what I think? You know, hear me out. I think we should go on holiday in the UK this year. Because every single day in May has been beautiful. Let's go to the
Milton Keynes
district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like, I mean, I can think of a couple of parallels for this, but I'd imagine it's a lot like going to Birmingham in March. Or like going and staying in one of the like really depressing communist era suburbs of Prague in like, I don't know, November. Like it's not fun. It's not Christmas yet. Like you don't even have that to look forward to. It's just like brutalist and cold and kind of nasty. And there's a lot of really unhappy looking people walking around.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? The citizens of the underworld are extremely like Brummy. It's just like, well, it's not great, mate, but I'll tell you what, at least it's not Wolverhampton.
Like imagine how fucked your life must be if the Wolverhampton Wanderers are like the highlight. It's a bad scene. That's fucking bleak.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's not good.
Maybe supporting Wolves is actually a sort of a kind of a freeing thing because you have no expectations. I feel like the football fans that are always the most miserable are the ones that support an almost good team. And I saw this my dad's whole life with Tottenham. It's classic. The almost good team is the most psychologically. It's tantalus. Yeah.
We'll never forget that season where we put the pressure on. Yep, we definitely put the pressure on.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe that's the secret to happiness in life is just to be a Bournemouth supporter.
They're just having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like you get to stick around the Premier League, you know, you get a couple of big upset wins every year.
Seagull lands on the pitch. All the excitement.
Yeah, or Crystal Palace. Like what like something like that. Does that
Oh, I wouldn't is, be oh, is, I wouldn't Crystal... be too sure about that. They seem pretty tetchy. Yeah, average.
Yeah,
Palace
well, yeah, that's true. Okay. This is purely my view from a very, very, very long way away based entirely on watching on television.
Well, I'll tell you the big thing about the Bournemouth fan, and apologies in advance to any of our fine listeners who may be from that part of the world. The problem with your average Bournemouth fan is they think they invented the concept of the sandy beach. They think there are no other sandy beaches in the whole rest of the world. Anytime Bournemouth comes up, it's all we've got a sandy beach. I don't give a shit about your sandy beach.
It's not the best football chart, is it?
You gotta just let them have it.
Shut the fuck up about your sandy beach. It's not a nice sandy beach. It's just a kind of sort of featureless kind of strip.
But this is the thing you gotta understand about being a fan of a not great sports team and one that you know is probably never going to be actually good, is you gotta just let them have it.
Okay.
It's not hurting anybody.
Oh no, I have no. This is more of a sort of sideswipe at the at the gen pop of the whole of Bournemouth.
Yeah. Phoebe's determined to lose Bournemouth for the podcast. We will have no listeners in Bournemouth left by it. I'm not talking about Bournemouth football fans here. No, I'm talking about everyone from Bournemouth in general.
Yeah.
Whole city.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm not sparing you.
Yes, I am.
Phoebe really taking a shotgun-based approach here to growing our listenership.
Look, as is her right.
Look.
Yeah, just dumping both barrels of an 8-gauge.
All I'm saying straight into Bournemouth. Is that there are sandy beaches, loads of other places. The only person that you really need to say this to is somebody from Brighton with their horrible like foot-eating beach.
That is a bad beach, Brighton, to be fair.
Okay, so I have, again, having only experienced Brighton through the lens of watching it on the Peacock app on my television. Yeah. Tell me more about the shortcomings of the beach in Brighton.
Oh, I hate Brighton in general. I mean, this is episode passing. I've discussed this at length, but it's like, what if a shit seaside town, like, but almost all seaside towns in the UK are shit. That's kind of table stakes. But Brighton is like, what if you made one of those decrepit seaside towns like 10% nicer? Like, you gave it basically a coat of paint and that's it. And then you charged London prices for everything. And it's just like, okay, I could be in fucking London, and I'd rather be in London at these prices. And it's got a pebbly beach. Terrible. And also, every restaurant is vegan. I'm not against having a vegan option in every restaurant. That's fine. But if you can't find a non-vegan restaurant, crazy.
Yeah. No, I'd like to sink my teeth into something that was once alive. Like, give me that.
Absolutely.
Give me the freedom to do that. And see, this is why if that happened in the US, it would be on Fox News every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Every day. Until they started offering just raw steaks, in public.
There's a shop in Brighton that does vegan shoes, which is
what the fuck is a vegan shoe?
Oh, what it is, Pat, is a really clever way of rebranding plastic shoes to make them seem like they're good for the environment rather than just cheap plastic shoes. Anyway, and they have a big sign out the front. And it's a picture of a cow smiling, and the cow is wearing shoes. And I have so many questions about this.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we know cows don't need to wear shoes.
Exactly.
They don't need that. So first, right off the bat, they've lost me.
A cow's shoes are sort of implicitly vegan, really. They're being left on the cow. They're not, a cow would, because the implication of that sign is that the cow would otherwise be wearing leather shoes, but just like with regret. Just like, well, you know, sooner or later you have to choose between having friends and having shoes. And I chose shoes, understandably. I wouldn't want to look like an idiot running around with no shoes on.
What do you want? You want them to get rotten hooves? Like, that's just cruelty.
Yeah, trench hoof.
I knew someone who during a fraternity hazing event got trench foot.
What? How?
They made them stand in a shower with the showers on for like 6 hours, and a guy, and this guy who lived in my on my dorm floor freshman year of college got trench foot. Oh. It was disgusting.
Oh, something that's kind of made me feel a bit ill.
It was bad. That's, hey, America, baby. That's American universities in the early 2000s.
I really hate that thing when your hands and feet go like wrinkly from being in water for too long. So that is quite upsetting for me.
Yeah, no, it's and believe me, if you don't like the wrinkles, you're not going to like trench foot.
No, presumably not.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So
Phoebe just gave a look.
I wish we could communicate the look that Phoebe has on her face right now.
Yeah. Phoebe ran the full gamut of like both kombucha faces in that story. Which is a shame that the listener doesn't get to see that.
Both kombucha faces.
Yeah, you know the meme of the woman trying kombucha, and she tries it the first time and she's doing like a disgusted face, and then she tries it the second time and she's like,
Yeah? That's very famous meme.
I know them. Is that the origin of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. She tries kombucha. That's where it comes from.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I am, of course.
I appreciate if you didn't know that the phrase "she did both kombucha faces" is an almost like Manchurian candidate activation phrase level of obscure.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine being someone who isn't brain poisoned by the internet trying to parse the conversation we're having right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just fucking gibberish if you're not in that world.
It's just listening to three monkeys chattering.
Just clattering away on the keyboard here, trying to make something.
Well, I tweeted this, but I saw that Andrew Tate was considering starting a political party in the UK.
Of course he is.
And then the first thought that came into my mind was, this is like Count Binface for people on anabolic steroids. And then I was like, how would you explain that sentence to anyone who's not spent 10 years plus on the internet? Like, it's just like, even just Count Binface is, anyway.
That's an aging, it's an aging meme, but it checks out.
Yeah. So, chaos. The rough plot of this episode, such as it is, Eurydice's gone down to the underworld. And there she meets Caeneus, who is an underworld person. He's kind of working for Charon. It's sort of unclear exactly like what the system is.
What the hierarchy is. Okay, we do meet both Hades and Persephone in a puzzling scene, which is where Zeus is trying to track down the watch that he gave to Dionysus.
Oh, well, the Dionysus stole. Dionysus nicked it from him.
Oh, okay, that'll be why. Fine. Okay, thank you. Thank you for the explanation, Pat. There's a bit where it shows Hades and Persephone, and for some reason they've decided to go, like, stylistically, they decided to go with like a bit Mad Men, like a bit Hudsucker Proxy, and a bit Janelle Monae video. And I found that so distracting that I couldn't really concentrate what was going on. But there are these people called divers, and they help people across the Styx.
Yeah.
They all look like they're like dredging the river for bodies, which I don't know if that's deliberate or not, but it's quite funny if it is. And Zeus is trying to get Hades to, it's like, it's really difficult to find and train divers. Zeus is trying to get Hades to like to expedite some more divers. I don't get why.
This is somehow part of Zeus's multi-stage plan to make the humans afraid of him again. Where he has not revealed the exact details of that plan, but I think we're meant to understand that this is part of the plan.
So we've got Caeneus, and I was like, I'm vaguely familiar with this name, but I think that they've just chosen it sort of at random. Because he's a lapith. He's a kind of non-specific lapith, and he wasn't like one of the big deal lapith.
Mm-hmm. Father of really an Argonaut.
Yeah.
I got really sad when they took away his three-headed dog. Oh, it made me really sad. Yeah. I didn't like that.
Yeah. You don't take away a man's three-headed dog.
No.
A fun.
What is a man? What is a man without his Cerberus?
Dad didn't want a three-headed dog, and then you see Dad with the three-headed dog,
and he's dressing him up. He's gone to the store, and he's got three little Carhartt jackets.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's funny how they're not like scary three-headed dogs. It's just like a three-headed Labrador, which sort of implies that there could be like a three-headed Pomeranian.
Which, as we all know, would be fucking hilarious. So
yeah, that would be great. Let's have a three-headed sausage dog. Let's make that dog just Euclideanly impossible.
I don't know if you've ever seen this video of a dachshund set to a tune called "The Cheese Tax," where this it's it, there's
that sounds
there's
like a Daily Mail headline. Starmer proposes cheese tax on working Britons.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll tell you this for nothing. And you know what? I never thought I'd say this, but it is my honor to announce that I am defecting to the Tories now.
Ooh.
And as I saw,
because of the cheese tax.
Because of the cheese tax. And B, because I saw a headline this morning which said that number 10 is shelving the beaver rewilding project because they think it's too much of a Tory legacy. So they're rolling it back. They're not going to put beavers in the rivers.
No.
I am absolutely fuming.
Wow, Why would you not put beavers in the rivers? That's their home. That's where they go.
Exactly. Beavers are sick.
Yeah. Okay, beavers are. Did you know beavers are responsible for building the largest currently existing dam in the world?
Yeah. The Aswan Dam.
Yeah, that's the one.
Phoebe's going to be on strike till they put beavers in all the rivers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. Look, that's... I you got to stand on business.
Yeah.
And if beavers are your business, then stand on them.
Yeah.
Not literally, because you'd crush them. They're rather small.
They're small, but they're tough.
They are.
Oh, I love them.
Guy. We had there were beavers near my hometown, mm-hmm. and there was a fairly sizable river that ran through my hometown, the Yakima River. And the beavers actually on numerous occasions nearly flooded the freeway by building dams along the river. On multiple occasions, it's like, wow, there is water right next to the freeway. And then you look over and there's just these two beavers looking at you like, what are you going to do about it, huh? Like they, get fucked, man.
They just hate seeing still water. They think it sucks. They think it ruins the harmony of the landscape. They're trying to they're trying to move the water along. They think water is lazy. They're like, no. Why are you sitting there? I want you to move it.
Yeah, they're better at this than everyone else is. Like they've been doing this for millions of years. Us, we are hydraulic engineering newcomers. Like, let's leave it to the experts here, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Beavers built the pyramids.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. There you go. There used to be a big river that ran through all the pyramids, but it's just dried up. So,
That's God, I could I go think. So deep on recent.
That's what I think.
Yeah,
I could go really deep here on recent research about why the pyramids were built where they were, which is all about a now dried up river channel that used to lead almost directly to the base of the Giza Plateau. So most beavers. Of the building, all beavers, all the famous Egyptian beaver. A lot of eyeliner on that fella. which let's be honest, eyeliner on a beaver would be adorable.
So funny.
But don't pretend you don't want to see a beaver with coal on its eyes,
do,
man.
I do.
You
that.
Do. You do. We all do. You know we do.
It's a beaver getting all tatted up for a girl's night out.
What? Yeah. World's cuntiest beaver.
That works on two levels, Milo.
Shoes on, hoops on, babe. He's gonna wish he never left you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I did consider that level with beaver rewilding project, but decided to leave it.
It was implied. Yeah, it was heavily implied.
Well, there we go, Phoebe. We could get you on the Joe Rogan Experience to talk about how beavers built the pyramids. I think that would actually we'd onboard a lot of listeners from that.
You would be significantly raising the intellectual level of the Joe Rogan podcast with that take.
The thing is, if you did one of your deadpan bits on there, you would just never be challenged. Like, it would just he'd be like, oh yeah, okay.
Oh, that's wild.
Beavers, yeah.
Huh?
No, you're right. Yeah, they are strong.
Those little guys with the tails like the ping pong bat.
how many beavers do you reckon you could fight?
None.
Six, seven.
They're tough.
Like, how they're small, how big are the beavers, tough though?
The teeth.
They got those teeth.
Be aware
man.
Of the teeth.
The teeth. That's yeah. That's again smarter.
Yeah,
smarter.
Yeah, we'll lure Rogan in with this beaver chat.
I gotta say, I love the way that they handled Dionysus in this show. I really think they fucking nail it, because the modern accounts of Dionysus, like modern treatments of Dionysus, tend to focus on him as the god of wine and partying and having fun and things like that. But for the ancient Greeks, Dionysus was just as, if not more, associated with madness and kind of the thin line between sanity and madness. And the presence of Dionysus is kind of a watchword for towing that line, and really and the knowledge that it doesn't take that much to push someone into a fit of extreme behavior, extreme mourning, extreme elation. Like, Dionysus is there as kind of a like an avatar of the extremes of human emotion and feeling. And I feel like this show has just absolutely 100% gotten that perfectly.
Yeah.
That you see him hanging around at all of these places where people are feeling things, right? And he's pulling people deeper into their feelings. And he doesn't really understand the human's feelings, but he feels the intensity of them and he cares about the intensity of the feelings.
He's an empath.
And yeah, he is. And like, I just feel like that's, it's a really true to the Greek understanding of Dionysus as they actually understood him. And B, I think it makes him a really like fascinating character, and it just like leads to some pretty fun shenanigans that we get to see in this episode.
We do have some shenanigans. I have to say, I totally agree with you in terms of like the framing and reading of Dionysus. I somewhat suspect that it's not necessarily deliberate on behalf of the writers that they were like, you know what, we really want to dig into how the Greeks would have seen Dionysus. We don't want to make him the wine guy. We want to make him the crazy guy. You know, the guy with the dancing and the revels and the woods.
We want to give him the Guy Fieri haircut.
We want to just make him like a little bit kooky. We want Dionysus to be the, you know, the guy who takes his nunchucks into the general store. That's what we want. That's what we want Dionysus to be. I think that they've just sort of had like a bit.
See, Dionysus wouldn't be the guy taking the nunchucks in there. He would be the one standing there being like, "That's a fucking awesome idea.
Yeah,
you should absolutely take the nunchucks into that.
Yeah,
store.
And you know what? Yeah, you should take your shirt off too.
Yeah, 100%. Dionysus feels like big shirtless guy. Like, basically, you know who should have played Dionysus? Fucking Bert Kreischer. That's who should have been. He's an American comedian.
I Am the Machine guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of that's one take.
He's
on
from
Dionysus.
The Joe Rogan Experience extended.
Yeah,
universe,
You don't need to worry about it. It's not important. That's a joke for American listeners of a certain age. And no one else. But like, yeah, I kind of do wonder how deep the writers have gone on this, because it really feels to me like they get it.
I agree. I mean, I don't know. Like, as you know, I kind of feel like, hey, the gods were not very nice people. Feels like a not very original observation.
Look, the gods were complicated. They had mental health. You know, let's not forget. And people could be pretty annoying. Okay.
Yeah. And there's nothing that says a god can't have a little menti bee, little mental breakdown.
Exactly. Come up Olympus Day. I'm having a menti bee.
Pushing turned me lover into a bee. Dionysus is the god of text him that. Yeah. Exactly.
Dionysus is like the girls group chat.
Yeah, you're not insane, and neither am I.
Yeah,
no, 100%. This, that also works for a certain brand of 3-person men's group chat. That Dionysus would also fit in perfectly in that context.
A three person
men's group chat. Yes,
that's chaos.
If anybody saw the contents of one of my 3-man group chats. I would never be allowed in public again.
The 3-man group.
How many 3-man group chats you got? Are any of them called Kerberos?
No, I'm actually going to rename my main 3-person group chat Cerberus.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Just
right
the three
now.
Dogs.
It's currently three and a dog.
The title of that group chat is currently Cultivating a Flavor Feast. It used to be edibles with your brother-in-law, so we'll have to. I'll put that to the group for a vote. I'm in 2 3-person group chats, and they really are chaos.
No, I would never do edibles with my brother-in-law. I only do edibles with other people's brother-in-law. As long as he's someone's brother-in-law, that's all that matters to me.
What you got to understand is that the Greek conception of doing edibles with your brother-in-law. It can't be your brother-in-law. That is outside of the realm of understanding.
What was the symposium, if not, in a way?
Edibles with your brother-in-law, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Throw in a little light sacrilege and off you go.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to push this parallel. I'll probably further than it should go. But, you know, one of the benefits of a group chat is a little boundary pushing, a little light sacrilege, a little boundary crossing. And what is that if not a symposium?
Yeah, exactly. What
they're most active when somebody is lit.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about Plato's Symposium is that with all Greek things, it starts off pretty homoerotic. But gradually they get so fucked up that eventually it crosses over into being heteroerotic, which is just the complete inverse of like the.
Yeah, I mean, the Greeks were. Greeks were what we'd call whole positive, I would say. They're really.
that is my blood type.
Yeah, they're just, you know, if you can fuck it, they were probably going to go for it.
R.I.P. Plato, you would have loved Fleshlight.
Honestly, the Fleshlight would have been a very popular accessory.
Ah, simulacra.
So Plato was jacked. Plato was a wrestler in his youth. And at one point when Plato was losing a philosophical argument, he just got up and flexed. And counted that as him winning the argument.
Which is the origin of calling something a flex. not to flex on you, as Plato was once quoted saying.
But that's where it comes from. Yeah. This is it's canonically the origin.
Yeah, it's an ancient Greek concept. So Dionysus is trying to help Orpheus in his quest to track down Eurydice. And in the process of so doing, they go to a bar that's like a riff on Plato's cave.
Yep.
Which, again, where is this set? Is it now set in like Hellenistic Greece? Because I'm fully in like myth territory here, and then you're dragging me like thousands of years forward into Plato's cave.
Yeah, it's like the Perth suburbs is where the cave is located.
Yeah, to me, like, yeah, that's, full of South Africans.
But I did appreciate that the fates, two of the three fates, were Conleth Hill and Eddie Izzard. That's the kind of absolute touch of madness that this show, I'm quickly associating with this show, where like, it's who is the most bonkers person or people that you could get in this role, and that's just who it is, and like, that's kind of awesome.
Is Izzard using Susie now still?
I'm so sorry. I actually don't know.
Kept the name but just changed the pronouns, but I can't remember either. Wikipedia has it as Susie Eddie Izzard, known professionally as Eddie Izzard.
Ah, fair play.
I think so. Well, in either case, Take it in good faith.
It stands.
Eddie/Susie Izzard, a woman, is in this show.
I think we've
covered so she would all keep using places. Eddie Izzard as her public name because it's more widely recognized.
I would guess so. Yeah. But yeah, she's great. Right. So yeah, they go to this bar. And the fates are having like a competition as to who can be allowed into the underworld to try and get their dead relative back. And unfortunately for Orpheus and Dionysus, they're up against a couple whose son has died. And they're like, oh, well, obviously we're fucked. They're going to get this. It's like being up against the dog act in Britain's Got Talent. Like, you know, there's not really any chance. And then basically Dionysus has to sell Zeus's watch to Eddie Izzard in order to be allowed into the underworld.
Yeah.
Another very, very ancient Greek touch. The performance that the grieving parents give, very Greek tragedy. I thought that was a pretty cool shout to the norms of kind of ancient Greek emoting on stage. I thought that was pretty neat.
I agree. I thought that worked well.
Nobody laments anymore.
nobody rends their cheeks and covers it with ash.
Never see anyone begriming their visage these days.
No.
Yeah. Not enough performative wailing.
Remember the last time that you told anyone of anyone's Scythian scalp?
Yeah.
I have a very dear friend who has already planned his funeral. He's from South Carolina. If you're from South Carolina, you're allowed to plan your funeral as a man in your 30s. Like that's part of the deal. And at his funeral, he plans to have just out of nowhere crying drag queens who are unrelated, but nobody knows who they are. He just wants the crying drag queens to appear. And I'm like, that's, you know what? I respect that. I feel like I can get behind that.
Yeah. I think that would be good.
Crying
and it would really upset a few people as well, which would be an additional bonus.
Yeah. But like crying because they're mourning or like crying for other...
Yes, mourning
for
drag
like
queens.
Total other reasons.
No, professionally mourning drag
I
queens.
I see. So not just like us, just a coincidence.
No, they're there for him. I see. They're there for him, yes.
the drag queens are upset by the sort of the aesthetic of your funeral. They just happen to be walking past and they were like, God, that really is awful.
Yeah, they were on their way to film a Chapel Rowan music video, saw a funeral, stopped in. It's, yeah, that's...
Yeah,
that was
yeah,
deal.
Yeah. You got it. Well, there are those people who do like funeral crashing, aren't there? They see it in the paper that there's going to be a funeral. And they know there'll be like free food, so they just turn up and they just pretend that they knew the person.
I'm pretty sure my Uncle Mike does that.
That's awesome. I kind of respect it because it shows such a commitment to the concept of brass neck. That mm-hmm. And I feel like there would be kind of a fun, there's probably a podcast in that, you know, just like someone who goes to a funeral every week and pretends to know whoever it is and just recounts what happens.
Yeah, quite a
Cousin
fucking
Jenny's
annoying
son.
Podcast.
Yeah. It depends how you do it, I guess. Maybe you'd be like, people would be charmed because they'd be like, who's that mysterious guy? He like spoke to everyone, you know, he spoke so warmly. I mean, he ate lot of sausage rolls.
Phoebe, I'm going to take issue with the idea that all podcasts are not inherently annoying. That there are levels.
whoa, Patrick, come on.
Let's be clear. As professional podcasters, there is something inherently annoying about the genre about the medium that we're working in. That's why you can't just allow anybody to have podcasting equipment. Like you've got to have a waiting period, like for guns, or like you should have for guns.
Yeah,
that's true. It's like converting to Judaism. They ask you three times if you're sure. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for domestic use, you can have like a handheld mic and a mixing desk, but like you don't really need a boom arm. That should be saved for, you know, regulated professional podcasters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no. You definitely need to be more heavily regulated than they are. Shut the whole thing down until we can figure out what's going on.
Look, it's not even my issue. Like, I'm just culturally a podcaster. I don't practice.
Well, you know, we do the festivals, but you know,
like, high holy podcasts, but like, you know, the rest of it, Rogan. And so on, it's too tricky.
So where do we think this is going? Do you guys like where this is going? Do you like the vibe of the show? Like, what are your thoughts now that we're two episodes deep?
I honestly couldn't tell you yet. I'm still not 1,000%. I think they need a little bit more work to settle into the tone. I don't think they've got the tone quite right. I think they've got a lot of stuff about engagement with the gods right, and I think they've got a lot of like, and as I said in the last episode, I really like how the extent to which they acknowledge like what myth is and how myth functions. So I think that works well. I'm not oversold on Wee Riddy as a main character. I think she's a bit of a drag, and I'm a bit sort of oh god, her again. She's got a face like a wet weekend.
Wet.
She's got a face like a British holiday. She's got a face like fetching up in the Lake District. It's July. The rain is sideways. The river is just the lake is just mud. It's kind of suffused with mud. What do you think having a face like a wet weekend means, Pat? Picture it.
I wish I could tell you.
It means something very different in beaver culture. To them, a wet weekend would be great.
Yeah, I can think of a lot of different connotations to the phrase wet weekend. Some of them good, some of them bad.
She's just a bit miserable. She's got the miserable face.
She is miserable. Yeah, I mean, like
fair enough. She's miserable because she is fetched up in the underworld and she has discovered that her husband has not given her coin, so she can't cross So she can't cross the river and be...
She's not got her pocket money for the afterlife.
Yeah, exactly. You know what happens if, like, your parents... You have to have warm juice in the box.
I did always find that confusing. Like, what is the monetary policy in Hades that they've got a guy who's relying on being paid in earthly pocket change?
Yeah.
To do his job in the underworld, where presumably you can't really spend, you know, a drachma.
Oh, that's what you think. There's the underworld tuck shop.
It's true.
Cash only.
No, he sneaks away to an off-track betting parlor. Karen does. Yeah. But they only take small bills.
Yeah.
So you can't just show up there with bullion. It's got to be individual coins. He likes to spread his money around. He likes to spread his bets around. Yeah. A lot of different horses, greyhounds. Karen strikes me as a greyhound guy.
Yeah. And he gets his three-headed greyhounds, obviously. And he gets his nails done at a no-card salon as well. Mm-hmm. So it's quite useful for him to have it.
Yeah. I like the idea of there being like undocumented immigrants in Hades. Like they're not dead, but they have been trafficked there for the purposes of opening a nail salon.
Jesus Christ!
Well, that's actually something a bit I wanted to talk about, because they definitely represent the queues going onto the ferry. They definitely represent that as like semiotically, like it's very kind of like TSA, but also like a bit like Ellis Islandy as well. Mm-hmm. So like maybe you've got something there.
Yeah.
What happens with Kinnaeus, who was working as like an officer? He gets promoted to being a diver, but he is, as part of Zeus's expedite the diver plan, but he is also part of the prophecy. He's one of the people who are going to bring Zeus down, according to David Thewlis.
Stephen DeLane.
Yeah, David Thewlis is Hades.
Is he? He looks like David Thewlis. Maybe. Do I just not know what David Thewlis looks like?
I'm seeing double here. Four David Thewlis.
Four David Thewlis's. Yeah. Not Thewlis, not Threelis, Fourlis.
Yeah, they. David Thewlis.
David Thewlis. Yeah, maybe I just don't know what he looks like.
It's so funny that has broken, Pat, because that is the stupidest thing we've said on the entire episode.
Okay, first of all, let's give ourselves some credit. That's not the stupidest thing. I'm not sure that even cracks the top five. Don't forget, we started this with Tate and Grendel in the morning.
Yeah, that is true.
Which certainly dumber.
Yeah.
Also, Matt Berry doing Awooga. My particular contribution.
Rewilding project. They've built a dam.
Yeah.
I have no interest in you, Beaver.
Yeah. This is coming along nicely. Yeah, yeah. You said you can only workshop these on guest appearances. Like we're doing great.
Yeah, here. I need to go on the Joe Rogan Experience and workshop my Matt Berry. Right. So regardless of how many David Thewlis's we've got, Prometheus is once again having one of his long chats with Zeus about, you know, how, you know, Zeus, don't worry, you're gonna be fine, and then light to camera, well, he's not gonna be fine, by the way. And once again, for me with Prometheus, every time Zeus brought me down from the liver being pecked out situation, I would be raising the question of my liver being pecked out every day. That would always be item one on the agenda for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No more liver pecking. Yeah.
Yeah. If we could just action that.
I'd maybe change it to different numbers on the agenda, just so that it doesn't kind of cause sort of semantic satiation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I want to be like mixing it up so that they always hear it. Like I don't want him to get like, I was about to say ear blindness, but there's something, but that's got a name. That's got its own thing. There's no such thing as ear blindness, right?
Well, it's sort of, you know, ear blindness implies something different from deafness. Like you couldn't see people's ears. Like you had a disability where you were unable to recognize ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know if that's an ear or not. I've got ear blindness.
Look, I come from a family of men with very very prominent ears, so ear blindness has never been an issue for us. That's we are whatever issues there are in my male line, ear blindness is not one.
They could use your family to train the ear blind, actually, yeah. into as like a starter.
You could have one of like Pat's cousins as like a kind of like an ear, like a kind of ear support animal, like
yeah.
just hands them out to the ear, like the ear blind, and they point out ears for them.
When he was little, my grandma would duct tape my Uncle Bill's ears to his head while he slept to try to get them not to stick out so much. That's
wow,
some real fucking bleak mid 20th century America right there for you.
That's really sad. That's
it's,
awful.
It's not good, man.
Did it work?
No, of course not.
Just, imagine that. Like, people thought she was crazy, but you know what? She was actually a woman in STEM because it worked.
I mean, look, like, there was a lot of good things my grandma did during her life, but I don't think that was one of them.
Could have made a fortune out of that.
Yeah, if it would have worked, our lives would have looked a lot different.
Yeah. And so, yeah, basically Zeus is paranoid that he needs to get his lucky watch back. Because he's like, fuck, you know, I'm going through all this bad stuff. I don't even have my lucky watch, you know.
I love it.
Superstitious for a god.
Yeah.
If you're an ancient Greek and you're a god and you're superstitious, does that mean that you've got a very peculiar kind of type of self-hatred? Is that what superstition is?
If you're a Greek god.
I mean, I think that's part of the deal, and it's part of what they're going for, which I love, is that the gods are just incredibly insecure and bitchy, and like at no point do they seem admirable in any way. Like, they have power, but the fact of their having power does not make them in any way, shape, or form good or worthwhile.
Yeah.
We have a particularly unpleasant scene with Hera, which we won't go into.
Jesus,
it's horrible.
I was not expecting that.
I mean about them being, they need to figure out what it is they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, they need to work out if they want it to be like quite bleak and dark, or whether they want it to be a bit like an early Kevin Smith film.
Everyone in big jorts.
Hey, jorts are still viable today. Like, I don't want to hear any jort slander right here, Milo.
They're still viable. They still work. Still,
like something a 1920s politician would say. Jorts are still viable. In the current, we've pegged our economy to jorts, and we predict that the value of jorts will continue to rise throughout the 1930s.
Yeah, that's look, man. Like, what could possibly happen? What could possibly go wrong late in 1929 to make jorts lose their value?
The German Chancellor has assured me that he will refrain from hindering the European jort supply.
He certainly won't be going to Poland to get any jorts.
No,
I'm sure of that. So, yes, that's a horrifying scene, and I think that gets at the basic issue here, which Phoebe, you've pointed to quite effectively, which is that however well this is working conceptually, as a show with a plot that is presumably advancing in some identifiable direction, I'm feeling real lost. And I don't think I can blame the weed for that.
Yeah. In the Wikipedia summary.
Could you blame
summary...
the jorts? Could you blame your, can you blame your unviable jorts?
Mr. Jorts.
I'm never
They're breaking down. It's a degradation of the system.
We need to move past the viability of the jorts. Okay. Is this is bringing me back to being 13. I wore a lot of jorts when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, Phoebe. It's not good.
Yeah.
I had my jorts time.
Yeah.
I had my jorts period. But,
yeah, they were popular in the UK, particularly in the early 2010s. Oh man.
Really?
Slightly above knee length, you know, the top man jort. Oh, it had a stranglehold on men.
The 2010 jort was a pale imitation. It was a pretender. It was like artificial nutmeg. It's no good.
Artificial nutmeg.
This is a 2001 jort. This
yeah,
is
the
like
wide
a,
leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, an era yeah. jort. Is that what that's what that was?
Yeah, your jorts needed
archival
to be
jorts.
Yeah, a viable jort. That's
jort. That's a viable jort. The 2010 jorts, they were not viable. That's why they didn't survive.
Yeah, as to quote President Lyndon B. Johnson, when he was ordering new pants, like riding a wire fence.
I can't, whenever Lyndon B. Johnson comes up, I can't help but imagine his name in the cadence of Women Be Shopping. That's just how it rolls off the tongue to me. Lyndon B. Johnson.
Yeah, this is so. Yeah, so have you guys have heard that clip, right? Of Lyndon Johnson ordering pants over the phone.
No.
Are you seriously? It's amazing.
Oh, maybe
so
I have. Because isn't this thing about Lyndon Johnson having like a huge penis?
Yes.
Right.
He called it jumbo.
What is that true?
Yes.
I call my penis 747.
Yeah, Lyndon Johnson famously and repeatedly. Said that John F. Kennedy was like an amateur womanizer, that he, Lyndon Johnson, was a true master of the craft, thanks in no small part to Jumbo.
Imagine having a huge cock and your name is Lyndon B. Johnson. Incredible.
Yeah.
It's porn coded.
Yeah.
Like, is that where the nickname Johnson comes from?
I don't think so. I think it predates it.
Mm.
So why did he miss that obvious opportunity for nicknaming?
If you are already a Johnson, maybe your Johnson needs to be more distinctive. And again, calling it Jumbo, a literal description of the contents of one's
like
undershorts.
Like it's a Savaloy.
I don't know. I think it makes it sound like a pet hamster.
Which it did actually bear a striking resemblance to.
Not for the women that Lyndon Johnson was trying to get with in mid 20th century America. I get the feeling that man knew his audience. Like he got to remember he was from Texas, and so we think about the MILFs that Lyndon Johnson would have been going after. Back in the day, I think for them, Jumbo may have been the height of wit.
Well, I hear Mr. Johnson is rather aptly named. I've heard tell of his Jumbo, and it is not a pet hamster, mind you, Mary Lou.
A real conversation that could have happened somewhere in the Dallas suburbs in 1966.
Absolutely, yeah. How did we get onto Lyndon B.
Johnson? I don't know.
Oh, we're talking about jorts.
I don't even remember how we got to jorts, though. And the viability thereof.
Something about Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah, Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, tone, yes. So is this going for, like...
Yeah, come on!
See, come that's on! That's how you know we're fucking professionals.
Closing
at this.
All is, the parentheses, baby.
Yeah. Before we got sidelined on viable jorts... and all of the tangents that came off of that, there is a real question as to whether this is trying to be dogma or it's trying to be something rather darker, and like because dogma is kind of the gold standard for that kind of thing, for better or worse. And
second time it's come up this week.
Dogma.
Yeah,
it's a fucking great movie, man. I love that movie.
Dogma's the gold standard for that kind of thing. Sounds like a memo you'd get internally at the Vatican.
Along with Vatican Skims.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's along with the College of Cardinals branded Skims.
We've done a collab. Yeah. God, yeah, I've not watched Dogma in years. I mean, that could be one for the pod.
Like I said, it's
doesn't hold
it's
up.
It's not holding up well. Even if they replaced it with a three-headed dogma.
Yeah. We've still got the juice. Don't you worry. Don't you? We had you going for a minute there, listener, didn't we?
On the juice front.
I thought our juice was
unviable.
No. Oh no. Oh no.
Oh,
this
no.
is live.
Oh no. This is viable juice. This is jumbo
extremely
juice.
Viable juice. Yeah. It's you could carry it around. If you wadded up your jorts, you could carry it around in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you really have hit on the issue here, though. Like, for as smart as much of this is, and as deeply embedded as it clearly is, and I would say a fairly sophisticated understanding of ancient Greek myth and how they understood the gods.
Yeah, I think it is fairly sophisticated in its understanding.
Yeah, for all of that, I'm not entirely sure that it all works as a coherent story.
No.
At least through two episodes.
Yeah, they're trying to be a bit too cagey about the plot, I think. And it's but we'll see. We'll see how that develops in episode three.
I would quite like to know what the plot is. Like, I know that that it is, you know, the fashion in recent years for the TV shows to kind of warm up as you watch them. But that's not really. It's not really good enough, is it? You gotta tell me whether or not something is viable, straight out.
Oh, please tell us what the plot is, sir. Please. We've been waiting two whole episodes.
You know what? I want to know if these jorts are viable.
Yesterday evening, I watched Heat with Annabelle.
Yeah.
And she'd never seen it before. And and then she did, first 5 minutes, she's doing the classic, who's that? Why are they doing that? What's going on there? And I was like, well, this is the kind of movie where information is gradually revealed. And those are things that you don't know yet, but you'll come to understand them later. And she said, I don't like those types of movies. I like the types of movies where they explain it all at the start.
A second screen movie. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, like an Adam Kay type, like someone in a hot tub explains it to you and then it cuts back. That's Wayne Grove. That is his real name. He's kind of a bad guy. Yeah.
He's going to get worse.
And he's going to get worse.
He's gonna get a ton worse. I want to know. I want to know if the jorts are viable. I want to know if, the whiskering around the groin of the jorts. I want to know if that's painted on in a factory or whether that is because of hard wear on the jorts. I want to know if those jorts have sat on the edge of a half pipe in a skate park.
Yeah, are they load-bearing jorts?
Are they load-bearing jorts? What, talk to me about the seams. Do the seams hold true, sir?
It brings me no pleasure to point out to the Prime Minister that the groin of the jorts of our economy has whiskered. The gusset of the jorts of this great nation, this once great nation, has, I'm afraid, been rent asunder by the policies advanced by this government.
It brings me no pleasure to say it, but I think I see a button fly.
Oh, no, I prefer a button fly.
What, on jorts, Milo? Are you insane?
Yeah, better. hate a zip on a pair of jeans. Hate a zip on trousers in general. If I could always have a button fly, I would.
No.
Yeah. Do you know why? Because I never leave my fly undone when it's button. Because you just do it up. There's something about having to do the button at the top first, then the zip. You go wrong.
I have let a lot of bullshit off you slide over the years, Milo Edwards. That.
Now you've broken me. I'm officially broken.
Finally over.
That was my turning point right there. I have nothing left.
Right. This has been a Patreon episode. Thanks. Thanks so much for supporting the show. If you have any views on jorts, viable jorts, things of that
load
nature.
Load-bearing jorts.
Yeah, load-bearing jorts. Can jorts bear your load? Let us know. Are you packing a heavy jumbo? Does your gusset struggle to take the strain?
The question of can your jorts handle the load is something that many teenaged boys found out in the United States and elsewhere between 1996 and 2001.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because of the financialization of the economy.
Exactly.
Thank you for subscribing. We'll be back on the free feed next week with episode 3. I think that's it. Yeah, come and see me on tour. I've got a bunch of dates around and about the place. Australia, UK, etc. Leicester especially. I really need to sell tickets for that. So if you're in Leicester, please do buy tickets to my show. Cheers. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.